Hello and welcome back to See You Out There podcast, the podcast where two unqualified football fans try to sound qualified to talk about football. We are back once again. This time, you know, we don't have a big heated game to talk about. We've got some FA Cup to talk about. And then today, as we are currently speaking, it is transfer deadline day in January. I think anyone who's listened to the podcast long enough knows that we're not really the sensationalist TikTok clippy kind of podcast that get really into transfers, but there's a lot of interesting stuff that's gone on today and in the last few days that we can talk about. But we'll talk about more so the football side of it rather than freaking out, you know. Well, at least we'll see. We'll see how well we do. But speaking of freaking out, someone who never freaks out is always calm and composed is my wonderful co-host, Shawnee. Shawnee, how are you doing?
Pretty good. What was meant to be a calm day for the Manchester United fan base, you know, thanks to Andy Carroll, it's become a bit of a madness. So we'll see where the dust settles come the end of transfer deadline day. So we're in the throes of it, as Owen mentioned. But yeah, there will be a lot of talk, I think, of deals that may crumble without us knowing. But as it's very much as it stands at the minute anyway.
Yeah, this episode will go out after the deadline has passed. So we're aware that we might sound quite silly at points if and when things do fall apart. But we'll start off with some FA Cup because a lot happened. I mean, let's get cracking with Man United. You mentioned it there. And Andy Carroll. United through to the next round. Another cup victory. Yeah, I think, you know, we mentioned this before. It's important that United stay on the tracks and all the cups. Silverware could be huge to bring in at the end of the season, but what's your take on the game?
You know, it was very much they broke down Reading. Reading didn't really offer altogether that much, although it did take a sort of striking masterclass from Casemiro to get the deal done. You know, I think given that United kind of walked over Nottingham Forest in midweek in the Carabao Cup and they look very much on track to get to the final there, you know, it's equally important that they do well in the FA Cup, and they did. You know, they're navigating the tie as well. They've just gotten another favourable home draw against West Ham. You know, it's probably the toughest game they'll have faced in the FA Cup to this point, or will face. But yeah, Reading, the big thing that has come out and has had the most ramifications is the injury to Christian Eriksen, and it's caused Man United to act in the transfer market. So it seems Marcel Sabitzer is coming in, which, you know, I would have been a big fan of maybe 4 years ago, but right now it seems we're kind of just plugging gaps, as they have done with the Jack Butland and Fout Veghorst loan signings, which is the first time these are kind of loan signings that make sense. But it's what's needed for to see it. You know, United are the only team left in four competitions, so they need to compete on all fronts and get Ten Hag a cup at least in his first season and confirm that Champions League spot.
Yeah, I think one of the main things here, if we're moving on already to Sabitzer, is that I think United see an opportunity here. I correct me if I'm wrong, but I think United expected to be in a fight this season for the top four, which it appears they're in a very nice position now to sort of elevate themselves and secure that and push on and maybe perhaps even win some silverware. So I think this is sort of a heavy push to sort of finish higher up, to do better, to maybe win some trophies and bring home more than possibly what was not expected this season, but sort of finishing well above the bar of where they thought they'd finish. Would I be right in saying that?
Yeah, I think very much like Newcastle at the minute, United are kind of ahead of schedule or where they thought they'd be. The overspend in the summer has meant they're exploring loan deals, but they need to strengthen them because they needed, all of these loan deals have needed to be done, given that Ronaldo left and the Martin Dubravka loan ended, so they needed a new backup, and now Eriksen's injured for 3 months in the crunch period for Europa League and domestic cup competition. So yeah, they are ahead of schedule and they see an opportunity, especially because, as I understand it, United's, like, well, the coffers are closed given the ongoing sale, but there's also, I think, some, rather than UEFA financial fair play, some Premier League expenditure rules they have to be slightly wary of, given various things. So yeah, by getting into Champions League, that's revenue. By winning a few cups, that's more revenue and more prestige for the club. So, it, like, I think the administration anyway see we need to strengthen, so we need to get a few players in so we can ensure that the, you know, top four is secured at least, and then hopefully any cups and all of that are a bonus given how United are positioned in those.
Yeah, but I think ultimately good result for United. Yeah, being in all these cups is a very, very strong position to be in, especially considering their league form. And you sort of look at the FA Cup and the League Cup and think those are the two that, I mean, obviously the League Cup is coming up soon. That's going to be within United's grasp in a couple of weeks' time, you would think. Or possibly in their grasp. I'm not saying they're going to win it, but that one is very close. And then you've got the FA Cup, which I think a lot of teams have already kind of been wiped already. So there's obviously you've still got the looming beast of Man City, but you know, United should be well able to handle any other team that's in the FA Cup. You've got the Europa League. I mean, United should be able to handle most, if not all, teams of the Europa League. You know, they did manage to give Arsenal quite the game anyway. So I think United are definitely in with a shout of taking some silver at home this season, and covering that off with a signing makes sense to me. But shall we move on?
Yeah, I think so. And you mentioned Man City there in the Cup, and I think that's where we'll jump to, and Arsenal in the Europa League. We'll get into maybe Arsenal a little bit more later on, but just on the match itself, Owen, want to get your thoughts on losing to City, and does it mean anything in a wider sense? You know, I Arsenal seem to play a bit of a more rotated side than City, so only losing 1-0 doesn't seem to really, isn't, you know, it's respectable enough given the changes to each team or lack thereof.
I'm never going to say that I want Arsenal to lose a football match. That's just not going to happen. But I think other than a victory, this is sort of the best way a loss could have happened. I think, you know, you didn't want to go out there and get hammered by City. I think, you know, back in the Arsene Wenger days, Arsene Wenger was notorious for flipping this squad in his head. So we changed the entire 11 and we go out and get smashed, and then our morale will be on the floor. It famously happened to us actually against Man United, and then we went and just crumbled in the league after that, and then we didn't win the league title that year. So it's one of those ones where, you know, you want to go out and you want to play a good game. You can see those players, even though they're not the right pieces, like your Tierneys. You know, obviously Trossard's only brand new. I'm trying to think of some of the other players that came in to fill in. My brain is already sort of turning to mush when it comes to this game. I'm already thinking about Everton at the weekend. But, you know, when I'm thinking about this Man City game, even the pieces that came in that aren't supposed to fit, even Fabio Vieira as well, I should say, they still do the same job. They do the right job. I think, you know, the Rob Holding handled Haaland for a while. I think he did okay. He got his yellow card, and then he was substituted for Saliba at halftime, and then Saliba came on and did very well against Haaland. And I think that there were sort of little victories for Arsenal in this game, albeit not getting the final result, that really, I think we'll have Arsenal have their tails up ahead of that game in February. I don't think there's a feeling at Arsenal that they'll think, oh God, they were so good against us, we're never going to be able to beat them in a few weeks. I think it'll be a positive feeling in the Arsenal camp. You look at what happened, I think, you know, Thomas Partey came off with the rib injury at halftime, and Sambi Lokonga came on, and Sambi Lokonga drowned out there, really. Looked well out of his depth, and it looks like he's going to be a Crystal Palace player by the time we finish the podcast. So that tells you everything you need to know about Sambi Lokonga's current prospects at Arsenal. But yeah, and then I think for the goal, I think, you know, Saka switches off a little bit. Sambi has to cover off, I think it was Gundogan, and then it's Nathan Ake that pops up and curls one into the bottom right corner. So, you know, I think Arsenal did push them to score quite a decent goal. It was at the Etihad. It was only 1-0. I don't think Arsenal will have any sort of remorse about how they played this game. I think they came out to win it, no question about it, and had some good chances. I think, you know, looking at the XG, it was 0.51 for City, 0.35 for Arsenal, not miles apart. City obviously dominant in possession, 54% to 46%. But I think both teams full of quality. They weren't far apart, and this is a good sign for Arsenal, because we're used to getting run over by them in any and all circumstances, bar Arteta's FA Cup victory a few years ago. So that's sort of my take on it. I'm not going to say that I'm happy, because I'm never going to be happy about Arsenal losing a football match, but I think this is the best way it could have gone in terms of how the league went, and I just hope Thomas Partey is back to full fitness by the weekend.
Yeah, I think, you know, no great loss to Arsenal as well, not being in the cup, considering the position they find themselves in the league and having the ability to fully focus on that at this stage. I suppose in a sense it does add pressure if you, well, obviously they have the Europa League as well, but when it's kind of all on one competition, there's the extra pressure of you've no excuses nearly, or less excuses anyway, so... I feel like you can't read a massive amount into that game when it comes to the league games. As you say, Owen, it probably the best way to lose for Arsenal, and I don't think City will take much confidence going into the league games either from that result. So we will see in those league games. But I think finally on the FA Cup, maybe we should just touch on Brighton beating Liverpool in the 90-odd minute. Mitoma with a fantastic goal, Lewis Dunk scored, and Harvey Elliott scored for Liverpool. But I was surprised, like, Brighton were the better team, but they were a lot less convincing than they were against Liverpool only a couple of weeks ago when they beat them 3-0. So the main takeaway I take from this game is that I think Brighton should really be looking at the cup as a route to silverware for them, as well as obviously how well they're doing in the league. But this team is so good, and a lot's been spoken about in terms of them selling Cucurella, Yves Bissouma, Maupay to a lesser extent, but selling off so many what you would call important players and then just filling them with even better ones.
Ben White, Trossard,
yeah, well, you know, going back a little bit with Ben White, but yeah, exactly, Trossard as well. So, and they also dropped Caicedo for the game and still beat Liverpool. So it looks like if they can get Caicedo back and get his head right, I can't see why Brighton can't at least challenge for the cup moving forward, because De Zerbi's just taken them to a new level since Potter left, and there has to be a lot of credit there.
Yeah, I think super impressive from Brighton, not so much from Liverpool. Good God, what do they have to do to catch a break, huh? I just look at them and I think, is it going to be really hard for them to sort of turn, like, is this league campaign going to end for them in a whimper? Like, I find it very hard to see at this point. I think we spoke about it a while ago where we thought Liverpool sort of had somewhat of a chance of sort of turning their form around in the league and getting back up and in amongst it. And it's looking now, 29 points, 19 games played. They're out of the cup. You know, you're looking at a team. They're 21 points behind Arsenal. Same games played. Like, they're miles off it at the minute. And I don't think you can point to one thing or the other, but my goodness, like, where do they go from here? Do you think, like,
I don't know, because there's a lot been said about Klopp's control and growing influence, and some are pointing to that as a problem, that he's nearly having to do too much, because, you know, Liverpool have been famous for delegating and getting in, throwing coaches, and Klopp's been a motivator. But I think going to, there's a sense of, they don't have any fight. And you see the scenes of Trent Alexander coming off early, and, like, he just looks so... I've never seen him... He kind of looks kind of not like a prima donna, but kind of had a bit of a, you know, a face on him. And the squad harmony you'd kind of associate with Liverpool seems to be shattering, to be honest. You know, it's not what it was. Salah's really out of form. Nunes, you know, how much can you blame him as an individual when the team is not performing as well? I know he has misses a few chances, but I think as well, it bears mentioning that I never would have called Liverpool a dirty team per se, but some of the challenges laid on in that game were desperate. I'm referring, of course, now, look, we're Irish, so of course it was going to get a mention, but Fabinho on Evan Ferguson, like, there was no hint of getting the ball there, and it was just an atrocious challenge. And then moments later, Robertson on, I believe it was Solly March soon after, or no, it was McAllister, but regardless, two real studs up dirty challenges that, you know, and the way they were done, it does speak to players and a team losing, just kind of going, I need to do something, and like getting cross, and just they were dirty. Like, and I wouldn't have said that about Liverpool players in the past, but you know, Liverpool have to be called out on this, because you know, we know Klopp was, when Harvey Elliott got hurt in a what I would call rough but not unfair challenge on Harvey Elliott, or strike on Harvey Elliott, he was really, really moaning. But yeah, this Liverpool, they just look to be falling to pieces at the minute. On,
yeah, a tough one for the headspace of the many Irish Liverpool fans trying to figure out what to make of Fabinho chopping down Evan Ferguson and possibly injuring him for an extended period of time, possibly ruling him out of our qualifiers. Look.
Do you think Gareth Southgate gave him a fiver to Fabinho to make sure?
Yeah, just
Evan Ferguson is technically English qualified. You know, he has previous.
Yeah. Just get him to hold off a little bit. But nah, look. You know how I feel about challenges like this. I'm always on about it. I just think there's no place for it in the game. We're talking about the highest level of the game here. Like, a player like Fabinho shouldn't be making anywhere near a challenge like that. Ever. It's as simple as that. And then obviously VAR didn't deem it a challenge worthy of a red card, which I don't necessarily agree with. I think it was a red card, if I'm honest about it. You know, maybe there is a little bit of bias sneaking in there because of my attachment to the player. But yeah, I just don't think it's right that a player can be allowed to do that and get away with it. It's unfortunate. And he did get booked for it. But I just wonder, is that enough, you know? And then you talk about their manager, you talk about Klopp coming out and saying the same thing that I'm saying, that there's no place for challenges like that in the game, and then his own players are doing it. It sort of shows you the disconnect between the squad and the manager at the moment, and the sort of fracturing that's happening at Liverpool. Then you can get into the ownership and all sorts after that. So, yeah, it's not a good scene. It's not a good sight at the minute, but hopefully Evan Ferguson's okay. I'm glad that Liverpool got dumped out of the cup for a challenge like that. At least, the last laugh was had by Evan Ferguson, albeit probably on the trainer's table. But I think that's it for the FA Cup, really. Is there any other points? Anyone else who did anything extraordinary?
Look, Wrexham have got enough coverage. I think we can move on.
Well, Sean, should I introduce our two special guests, Ryan Reynolds and Rob McElhenney?
Oh, that would be, you know, like, that's the type of social media bollocks that they're known for at this stage. You know, hopping onto a lesser known podcast just to really get that viral view, whatever. But look, they're better at that stuff than us. Maybe they should have come in to broker peace between our next people, which is Pep Guardiola and Cancelo.
Oh, good luck. I don't think anybody could have brokered peace. But for those that don't know, Sean, break it down for the people.
Yeah, did my handbrake turn of a segue work at all? But anyway, yeah, so we're going to jump into our sort of transfer talk piece now with the kind of mad news that Cancelo all of a sudden has just gone to Bayern Munich on loan with a 70 million option to buy. This is only, you know, a month or so since the World Cup, and before that he'd started nearly every game for Pep. You know, Cancelo with getting rounds of applause and plaudits for his performances as a fullback last season, and how he fit this perfect inverted midfielder / fullback role that Pep had developed, and all of the assists and everything, and it just seemed like a match made in heaven. You know, he was wearing the number 7 jersey for City, and now in the space of a month he's gone, just chopped from the City squad. The speed at which he's been dropped and sent out, and also the speed at which they brokered a deal with Bayern Munich for quite a considerable amount of money, considering Munich acquired a Mazraoui as their new fullback in the summer. But yeah, I think it's very surprising that Cancelo has been cancelled, let's say, from this Man City squad.
Yeah, like, look, it's not as if Pep Guardiola has never fallen out with a player before. But I mean, you look at a guy like Cancelo in the Premier League team of the season last season. I think anyone who plays fantasy Premier League really enjoyed Cancelo last year, having him in their team and hoovering up all those points. Yes, Cancelo was sort of known as one of the best players in the league, and to the extent of how fast this has ramped up, Man City were quite happy and willing to let Zinchenko go for quite a decent price not too long ago. So this has all escalated very, very fast. And for it to have escalated to the point where Pep goes, "Nah, go on your holidays off to Bayern, get out of my sight," must be serious. It's kind of mad. And obviously I've sort of got my eyes wide open thinking, what the hell is going on? Like, that, this doesn't seem like a team that is, you know, dominating everybody. You know, the City that we've come to see in the last few years. Is the manager losing his grip a little bit? Is there a few fractures in the dressing room? What's going on? Are we being privy to, is this just the actions of one player? Are there bigger egos than we thought at Man City? Because I was under the impression that there was like no sort of ego like that, at least one that's in the first team that get thrown out. And I guess we should have been alerted to this when Rico Lewis was getting so many minutes, that there was something not right. Because I think as you know, watchers, especially when we're looking at a team that isn't our own, we can sort of say, well, you know, maybe it's Pep Roulette, or like, you know, he can be swapping players in and out, maybe Cancelo isn't fit, what have you. But so strange. And Bayern have a hell of a back line now. Jeez, I was looking at it there with Cancelo in situ, and I was like, oof, that looks fairly, fairly tight.
Well, it's making sweet feck all odds to them at the minute, because they found themselves haven't won a game since the World Cup or something, or since the New Year, because, you know, there was a winter break in the Bundesliga. But yeah, I did, you know, the Athletic event eventually came out with their kind of behind the scenes piece, and it does sound like Cancelo has quite the ego on him, which is something I hadn't heard before, and that he's not especially happy when he's not playing. And I think that's where all of the problems started, and he started to kick up a fuss. And maybe it's for the sake of squad harmony that Pep went, you know what, off you go, son. We don't need you around here, because we need to get our shit together to get a title on and potentially win a Champions League. Now, I don't think we're going to get the scenario of Cancelo playing against Man City, even if they draw Munich in the league, because he's cup-tied, having played for City already in the Champions League. But that would have been a fun storyline to add to that game. But yeah, Rico Lewis has come in and kind of filled the role very quickly. And, you know, he's probably not at full tilt with it yet, given his age. But
yeah,
he's come in and done exceptionally well.
I will say that, like, you know, I got to watch Rico Lewis up close, and Trossard gave him a bit of a run for sure. And then also you have you had the Arsenal front line gave him a bit of trouble, I think. I don't think he'd faced anything quite like that yet. So it'd be interesting to see how this develops now that he's, like, because I think there's a, probably a comfort for Rico Lewis in thinking, oh, well, like, you know, Cancelo's going to come back in, but this is a nice little jaunt I'm getting here, and now he's the guy. So it's a massive test for a player of his age. But if he's ready, he's ready.
Yeah, now, I think, you know, City have had Akanji and Stones playing at right back at various points this season, and of course they still have Kyle Walker, so I would say if Lewis continues to play the way he's playing, and Pep seems to trust him, then we'll see how this young player develops. But shall we move on? As I said, we were going to talk about Arsenal, and I think we come back to them in terms of their strategy and transfers this window.
Yeah, let's do it. Yeah, I mentioned Trossard. I think we spoke about it when we were talking about Mykhailo Mudryk and how, if and when Arsenal were going to pivot, and they pivoted quite fast. They went to Leandro Trossard. Looks like a pretty good piece of business from Arsenal. I think similar to what we talked about earlier at Man United, Arsenal are thinking, we've got a unique opportunity here. If we are going to sacrifice things for long-term strategy, let's not have the outlay be massive. Let's have something that is worthwhile and can function next year and possibly the year after, and possibly the year after. So I think they're looking at a player like Trossard and thinking, okay, he can play in all three positions across the front line, if not one more. Versatile, Premier League experience, goal scorer, hard runner, hard worker. And I think we've seen from his cameos and performance on Friday night that he is a suitable player for the Arteta system. So I think it's a good pickup. I'm glad that Arsenal didn't spend a ton of money. Arsenal will now probably regroup, rethink, and probably try and go for another wide player at some point, which makes a lot of sense. And then obviously you had the news today that Jorginho has come from Chelsea, 31 years old. The way that the landscape is with transfers, I think the majority of Twitter balked at the idea of Jorginho going to Arsenal. And is it ideal? No. Am I going out to buy my Jorginho number 20 jersey tomorrow? No. But at the same time, when you look at the long-term injury to Mohamed Elneny, Elneny's out for the season. Sambi Lokonga, after the Jorginho thing, he's now confirmed as gone to Crystal Palace, but you know, Sambi Lokonga putting all that on his shoulders, I think even in that brief performance on Friday night, you can see that that's not apt. So I think when you look at it across the board, and you've got Partey, Xhaka, and Jorginho as a backup to those two, it does make quite a bit of sense. And it's a player that Man City were after while Arteta was assistant. So he's quite aware of his profile. It's a player that Arsenal were in for before already under Arteta. Arteta's wanted this player for a long time. I think there's no illusions that this is an Arteta signing. Okay, if we're not getting Caicedo, then we're getting this guy. And I think this frees Arsenal up to go balls to the wall for Declan Rice in the summer. So I don't hate it. And hopefully Emil Smith Rowe will be back soon enough. So that's sort of a decent midfield four that, fingers crossed, can carry Arsenal to some level of glory before the end of the season.
Yeah, like we saw in the summer how Arsenal pivoted to Douglas Luiz late in the window for squad depth. You know, this whole January window, I think, is a big pivot, let's say, where they had ideas for targets in their head. But I think just because, and you mentioned this, I think, Owen, but because of the position they find themselves in with the league, they have to strengthen. They had to buy Trossard and they had to buy Jorginho. 12 million for 6 months, I think, is crazy, a little bit, to be honest. But
it's 18.
Could be worse.
18.
Oh, it was 18 months. Oh, okay. Yeah. Sure. That's sorry. All right. I was under the understanding it was a 6 months. Jorginho needed left. 18 months. All right. Yeah, fair enough. But good business then in that instance. There are two players I don't think Arsenal strategy-wise would go for given their age profile. And I think it's a good reference point when you see the Vlahovic situation of last January. You know, they didn't jump on a sort of 30-year-old backup striker last January, and they waited till the summer to go for Jesus. They were waiting for, they didn't go for Mudryk in the summer, they were waiting to get him in January, and then that didn't work out. So I think given the new circumstances they find themselves in, they had to do these deals, and it makes a lot of sense. I'm glad you mentioned the point. I was going to mention that point too about Arteta working under Pep when City were closely linked with Jorginho. This was prior to him going to Chelsea. So it all seems to marry up and make sense, to be honest, because I think we spoke about Martinelli waning, so Trossard covers that a little bit as well. And Jorginho, yeah, look, it all fits. So you can't really fault Arsenal with the business that they've done. I don't know who Kvyat is, but look, what was he, 12 million or something as well. So they've just been shrewd and efficient, and they making sensible decisions given their position. So kudos to them there.
Yeah, I think if I can have one last point on this, it's that David Ornstein reported that the general feeling from the Arsenal camp is that they're thrilled about the Jorginho signing. And I think this has been a hallmark of the Arteta era. It's no bad attitudes, only experience, only leadership, and bring that whole new mantra. I mean, Arsenal's mantra has always been Victoria, Concordia, Crescent, victory through harmony. And under Arteta, it hasn't changed officially, but you see that one bandied around everywhere. You see them plastering it up on the walls in away dressing rooms and stuff like that. It's that thing of always forward. And I think, you know, a player like Jorginho coming in with his experience and his sort of winning mentality, because he's won a lot in the game. He's a European champion, both for club and country, at the highest level, and Europa League as well. You know, a guy coming in like that who has seen the tippy top heights of the game can't possibly harm this team and how it operates. So, am I thrilled by it? No, but if you fast forward, let's say Arsenal do something incredible this season and then go and get, let's say, Declan Rice and Leroy Sané in the summer, you're going, ha, okay, they're ready for the Champions League next year. But yeah, I mean, I think strategic, I think Arsenal are right not to blow their strategy out of the water for no reason. I think it would have to be an extreme set of circumstances and the right player to do so. And the right player didn't come up, so Jorginho is here. Shall we move on to their North London neighbours? If I can get that out of my mouth.
Yeah.
North London neighbours. Tottenham. I was asking you before the podcast, has Pedro Porro signed for Tottenham yet? Who knows? But it looks like that one's going to be done before the window closes. This is one of our caveat ones, right?
Yeah, exactly. Because, you know, it was done on Friday. He had his sort of emotional non-verbal goodbyes to the sporting fans and the Portuguese Cup final. And then all of a sudden, Ornstein comes out that the deal fell apart, Sporting reneged on their part of it, yada, yada, yada. But it looks like it's back in place and everything's going well. You would hope so, considering they sent Matt Doherty out on loan and Jed Spence out on loan, both of their other two right wing backs. And I suppose the reason I suggested we talk about Spurs isn't because, like, yeah, Pedro Porro, like, highly rated enough and whatever, but the reason I mention it is because I think Spurs are just so chaotic at the minute with so much of what's going on, and in a really bad way, because, like, they signed Jed Spence in the summer and he's already gone out on loan because Conte's taken a dislike to him. And, you know, they're kind of doing, they're really backing Conte's kind of judgment to the hilt to a large extent. Like, Brian Heal, by all accounts, has been pretty good coming off the bench for Spurs. I can't claim to watch every minute he's played in the last few months or so, but he's been playing half decent. And now he's gone out on loan again because Conte's decided I don't want him. And it's just strange to me that I don't think the Spurs hierarchy really have the cop on to be like, especially with the results the way they're going, you know, does Conte really deserve this level of backing to ship out the two right wing backs they have in the club currently in favor of Pedro Porro? Like, they signed Reguilón not too long ago as well in the left wing back position. So these are the moves of a club who are desperate for kind of win now, but also are setting themselves up for failure, because I reckon Conte will be gone in the summer. They're going to be left with the whole half a squad, half a team's worth of right wing backs, and not sure what to do with them. And, you know, I think we mentioned before Potter or someone along those lines would have been better for this job, but Spurs is just strict adherence to what Conte wants seems a bit too chaotic and poor judgment for me at the minute.
Like, I'm going to be harsh, unsurprisingly, but I think, you know, Spurs had the benefit of stumbling across a generational striker from their academy. Stumbling's a bit too harsh, because look, it takes a lot to bring a player through, and you know, obviously the loan out to Norwich and loans out to Leicester for Harry Kane, but that's an academy product that has come through for them. Their recruitment has not been great over the last however long you wanna stretch it. Then you had that system under Pochettino where he managed to make it work, but they don't even have anything that you can point to youth-wise that you can say, there's an emerging star, or there's someone they can hang their hat on, or there's something that they can possibly unearth. And this seems like the perfect time, right, when the team is sort of floundering and sort of they need an injection of youth and pace and exuberance and hunger. And it just seems like they're going turgid after turgid after turgid after turgid player. And I imagine Matt Doherty will be more than happy to sit in Madrid and work under Diego Simeone. And yeah, this has been a bit of a disaster for Jed Spence, but I mean, Jed Spence probably should have rode the Nottingham Forest wave if possible. I know it's hard to turn down a team like Tottenham, and I know other Premier League teams are in, but it's, when I'm just looking at it, I'm just thinking, I don't know what Spurs would do without Harry Kane. Like, I don't know what they would do without Harry Kane. I don't know where their recruitment is. Like, you look at a player like, you know, they obviously spent big money on Richarlison, and I don't see it. I don't see it. And I know Richarlison has more to do and more appearances in a Spurs shirt before you can really make a proper judgment call. But at the same time, again, not a player they can hang their hat on. Heung-min Son looks like he's sort of hitting the brakes a little bit in terms of the form that he showed in previous years for Spurs, which is fair enough because he's been phenomenal for the past while. And then I look around that team and I can't see it. They don't, there's no confidence in the goalkeeper. The back line is a bit of a shambles. Christian Romero is good, but he's not incredible. He's not able to carry an entire back four by himself, or back three, whichever way you want to swing it. Yves Bissouma's been fine, but it turns out being in a great system like Brighton under Graham Potter was a lot more beneficial for a player like him. Yeah, I don't know about the future prospects for Tottenham. I mean, there was some news, I don't know if you caught it, but their emerging talent manager is actually swapping Tottenham for Arsenal, which is an interesting move because I don't know what emerging talent has popped out of Tottenham recently. Obviously, we're talking about youth football there, but like it just seems like everyone's making a run for it. And then you've got the problems with the Italian football problems that are casting a bit of a wide shadow. And it's like, I just think Tottenham need to just refresh completely.
Yeah, like I was going to mention that because Paratici, I think there's a storm brewing for him personally, but there was some rumour of some of the players who were involved in these transfers facing repercussions, i.e. Kulusevski and Bentancur, because those moves seemed a bit strange. So Paratici went to Spurs and then suddenly was pulling two Juventus guys over with them. Now, like, they both worked out well, they're actually good players for Spurs, but I'm glad you mentioned the youth piece actually, Owen, because it's happened a few times now. Jed Spence, Jack Clark, is it Dane Scarlett or something down in the loan divisions? You know, Troy Parrott's having his issues, not really kicking on loan. It doesn't seem like there's a joined up pathway and strategy with Spurs. It seems a bit all over the shop because by all accounts, Jed Spence was a club signing, and so was Jack Clark, and neither Pochettino in Clark's case or Conte wanted those players. you know, you look around, you look at even at Arsenal, you look at how they manage Saliba's entry into their starting 11. Even, you know, Man United are working on a pathway of sorts, and you know, their record of always having an academy player in starting 11s or in starting day squads. Even Chelsea now under Potter, Lewis Hall and a few of these guys getting starts and playing minutes. You don't really see that at Spurs. Since Harry Kane and since that sort of team that probably underachieved, they just haven't developed a clear pathway to get youth players into it. And, you know, Sessegnon, they buy players like Sessegnon and he kind of plays, but has he really developed? No. So you'd really have to question, like, what's their plan here? Because they're kind of a hodgepodge of buying young players they're not actually properly using, and then also trying to buy sort of win now players in quotation marks that are also aren't working. So I think they need to get back to what brought them success, which is get a project manager in and, yeah, suffer a little bit, but like work to build something more cogent than what they have.
Yeah, I think, like, you know, there's no way the Spurs fans are really behind this team. I think they're grateful to have a manager with the CV that Conte has, but I don't think they're behind the manager. And it sort of, it begs to look across the road up to N5 at what's going on at Arsenal and thinking, look at the difference it makes when you have a product on the pitch that people can get behind. You know, Spurs need to find their Bukayo Saka. And I'm not saying a player of that quality, but I'm saying, like, they need to find a guy who is just pure, raw entertainment and enjoyment and youth and power and pace and just brings it at the highest level. And you look at, you mentioned the other teams in the Premier League, they're able to produce players like that. There's players like that all over the show. Like, you know, leave Arsenal to the side for 1 second. I imagine it feels great for Man United fans when they see a player like Garnacho coming on and thinking, yeah, cool. Like, he's going for it. He's here to have a proper swing. And obviously you have Marcus Rashford in the form that he's in right now. I know he's not necessarily a youth player, but he's Man United through and through. I know Harry Kane is that for Spurs, but Harry Kane is getting on. And I just don't think that's a sustainable model for them going forward. Like, what are they trying to do? And if they're not in Champions League this year, what are they trying to achieve? This team is not going to win the league anytime soon. This team is not going to win the Champions League. Hell, they might not even be in the Champions League. So what's the deal? What's the game plan? I don't know what it is. I can't see it.
Yeah, and like, they just need to be building more sustainably than they are. But I suppose... say what you will, and I think we should move on, but say what you will about Chelsea, at least there's a kind of common thread to a common thread backed by a heap of cash. There's a common thread to the signings they are making. Now, they seem to be throwing mad money all over the place. Mudrick, the escalating fee they're willing to pay for Enzo Fernandez right now, which, you know, that's the key one that's yet to be done, that the money they're going to put down for Caicedo before Arsenal started to come into that bidding war, and then Brighton just said no to both. But, you know, Chelsea have fully signed anyway. Mudrick, Badiashile, Madiuke from PSV, David Datrofofana, and Malo Gusto. Those are all players under sort of 23 and under, and then João Félix on loan, which makes no sense to me. But anyway, at least all of them are young. They're probably considered some of the hottest prospects in Europe. They're putting a team together that I suppose they're backing Potter to mould and build as a force to be reckoned with in 2 or 3 years' time. But it is still mad to me the amount of money they are spending and how they are achieving it. You know, 12 million that they're getting for Jorginho is a drop in the pond of what they've spent. They even turned down Everton's 40-odd million bid for Gallagher, which I think they should have taken. But, you know, Owen, I know you're probably a bit sick of talking about Chelsea and how you always seem to be duking it out with them for players, even in the summer with Rafinha, which, you know, ultimately he went to Barcelona. But what's your take on, and I know we've talked about it already, but like, what's your take on this Chelsea January window alone? Because it's mental, in my opinion.
I think you know what I think about Chelsea. First of all, there are some words that I'm not allowed to use on the podcast. I think it's extraordinary how Chelsea have made themselves out to be a more dislikable club, considering where they've come from in the last few decades and who they're owned by. But my God, they've given it a right try. I don't really see the sense in this. I don't see the sense in what they're doing right now. I don't think if you look at a team like Newcastle and where Newcastle are on the table right now, and you look at how clever they're being with their money, and even bringing in a player like Anthony Gordon, who, you know, isn't a sure thing, but they brought him in for good money. They probably sell him on for good money if they do sell him, if they are moving quicker than they anticipated. But they've got Premier League youth experienced, a player who will definitely add something to that squad, and they're building slowly, and they're clearly behind the coach, and it's not just the coach's vision. They've built a team of people at Newcastle United who are moving the club slowly but surely up the table. Well, I say slowly but surely, they're going a lot faster than I think a lot of us had anticipated, but the likes of the signings that they're making for the money that they're making them for and the contracts that they have those players on seems a lot more palatable to me. When I look at, you know, the business that Chelsea have done, looking at Mykhailo Mudryk, obviously this one sticks in the bonnet a little bit, but the money that they've paid for Mykhailo Mudryk, it has to work out. I know they're amortizing these fees across massive contracts, but that's because they can only stretch this so far. And I think it's been reported loosely that UEFA are going to come down quite hard on that sort of thing very soon. So they'll get away with these ones, but they won't be able to do this for much longer, which puts them in a bit of a tricky and catchy situation. I think they've got an owner who is bold for sure and brash and an American, of course. And I think he's thinking, you know, I can bend the rules here a little bit, but football does not bend to one club, as we've seen in the past. Nobody is safe. And I think UEFA will be quick to stamp out this sort of thing. I don't think players being contracted to clubs for 8 years is a good thing. I think it's quite, actually, it's quite damaging. You could see a lot of bright sparks go out very quickly. You look at the fees that are being talked about here. Noni Madueke, like, again, I just give this forewarning about the Eredivisie. It is not this land of the promise that everyone talks about. Case in point, Cody Gakpo. Malo Gusto, I have to admit, I didn't know a lot about Malo Gusto before he came in. I'm sure I'd seen him play for Lyon. I watched a few Alexander Lacazette games and stuff, but he didn't necessarily stick out to me. Felix seemed a bit crazy. Badiashile, I think they had to get in at centre half. They've just brought in so many players and they've got so many bodies hanging around. And you mentioned players like Hall and stuff, and I'm sure Potter would love to bring that type of thing through and push that through, but I think he's being, like, Graham Potter's not going out and getting these players. Let's be real. This is a strategic thing that's going on. And I think Chelsea could be pushing themselves to financial places that they don't want to be in the near future. And if this doesn't work out, which, if you look at the emerging landscape of Man City being Man City, Arsenal, what they've built and how long that can possibly last for, Man United being the juggernaut that they are, Newcastle United, this is not an easy task for Chelsea to sort of climb their way up the ladder and sit atop the league once again. So the more money they throw at this, the bigger the hole they're going to dig. And I don't think it's going to work out. That's my hot take on it.
Yeah, you'd question the big money ones. And my problem with it is it seems excessive. And it's kind of greedy, you know, in terms of, do you really need that many wingers? You know, you just bought Mudryk, so why did you buy Madueke? Like, and also, I can understand getting Malo Gusto in, because, and it's interesting that they've left him on loan with Lyon for the rest of the season. He's one You know, I think he's considered a sort of hidden gem of sorts in that Lyon team as statistically and one of the best up-and-coming right-backs around, especially if you free him up to play as a wing-back. But these are definitely not Potter signings, that much is clear. But they're definitely not buying to fix the now anyways, you know? They haven't bought a striker to hang Havertz off, you know? Jorginho is probably the first of many to go. I wouldn't be shocked to see Havertz go in the summer. Hudson-Odoi, that'll definitely be a sale there. But, like, I wouldn't be shocked to see a few big names. I was read something that Koulibaly, apparently already, there was subject to a deal, but a loan to Inter, but his wages were too high. So, you know, if this team's given time to breathe and come together, I do think there's potential there. But given the money, you know, Chelsea have to come out of the traps all guns firing next year. I'm not saying they have to be fantastic for the remainder of the season, but once a full summer with them as a team, they have to be quite good, I'd say, early on next year. And I wouldn't be shocked if there was a lot of work being done behind the scenes to sell the likes of Havertz and Pulisic and stuff, because they're players with value that they could, you know, recoup some of this outlay they've made. And, you know, Aubameyang has to go because that was a crazy panic buy. So we will see. I'm interested to see how Chelsea will get on.
It's funny you say, like, Aubameyang, and I completely forgot he played for Chelsea. You know what I mean? And then you think about someone like Raheem Sterling, who's recuperating right now, and the amount of players that they have is bizarre. They've got, you know, N'Golo Kante to come back. I mean, they've got two keepers, one of which they could sell. I imagine that person will be Mendy, given Graham Potter's preference of Kepa. They've got Reece James to come back. I'm sure they'll have a look at fullbacks as well. Ben Chilwell. They have a lot of injuries going on at the moment, but my God, they've got a lot of players. And how do they make this squad work for them? Like, can I just check how close are they to the Champions League places this season? Like, is that a thing that they can possibly still be thinking about, or
they're 10 points off. They're tied for points with Liverpool.
Okay, so, like, it's still within the realms of possibility, but you would think that with the form of Man United and Newcastle, that's a ways away from where they're at right now, at least for this half of the season. And then even, you know, for them to leapfrog a Brighton the way that Brighton are playing would also kind of shock me a little bit. So this team is going to be playing Europa League football next season at best, I would say. Would you agree?
I don't know. I have a slight inkling that they'd be better off without it anyway. Do you know, if you gave this team...
But what I'm saying is no chance of Champions League.
Oh, definitely. Well, it's hard to know. Like, based on current form, you kind of have to say the top four will stay as it is. You know, Man United are kind of on the back of a tricky period, but they kind of go into a nice run of games all of a sudden again, which is where they've been strong. So, yeah, I think Liverpool and Chelsea will nearly be hoping that Brighton and Brentford finish above them so that they don't even have to grace the Conference League, the Europa Conference League, with their presence. It's definitely a mad situation that two clubs of Chelsea and Liverpool sides are no longer in the picture for Champions League. Because I think it's fair to say, because they're just not performing in any way, shape or form to warrant being anywhere near those spots.
Well, I'll stand corrected. Chelsea are still in the Champions League. So there is one
route. As are Liverpool.
Yeah, as are Liverpool. So that is a route. And let's be real. Stranger things have happened. But yeah, is that everything that we had for this week? Oh, no, I have one more. I have one more thing. One more very, very important transfer that looks like it's on the verge of happening. Anyone who listened to our transfer episodes for the summer will remember that I wanted a big, giant striker for Arsenal. Now, granted, expectations have changed. What I want has changed. I no longer want this player, but it looks like we are getting Paul Onuachu in the Premier League, coming from Genk to Southampton. And if you don't remember, Paul Onuachu is a giant, giant man. I think, what was he, 6 foot? Is he 6 foot nine? I should really know this, shouldn't I? He's 202 centimeters, so he's over 2 meters tall. And he will soon be gracing the front lines with Southampton with balls pinged in from James Ward-Prowse. So beware, Premier League. I did warn you. That's all I said. That's all I'll say. But yeah, I think we're done there.
Yeah, just a note on Paul Onuachu. When the news broke that he was coming, I questioned why I knew who that was, but I couldn't remember why. And for a few days now, I was like, why do I know this guy? Like, why have I heard of him? Because I hadn't. I was like, I don't feel like I should know about him. You know, I don't claim to be a Belgian football expert. But anyway, but then Owen texted me and said, as he's just said now, that he's arriving. And some shock to me that, oh my God, he's actually coming to the Premier League after all of that, because I thought Owen was just spinning his wheels in the summer. But look, we look forward to seeing how he gets on and how Southampton get it launched out of the relegation zone.
Yes, yes, yes. Paul Onuachu is the route out of relegation for Southampton. You've heard it here first. So, Paul, we'll see you at the weekend. And Shawnee, my friend, I'll see you out there.
I'll see you out there.